Welcome to Commissioner's Court. Merry Christmas to everyone. This is our last court of the year. We're so pleased that you're all here today. As we begin, let's all stand together. Do we have someone who would offer an opening prayer for us today? Yes. Maris, if you would, and then would you lead us in the pledges as well?
I sure will, Judge. Let's bow our heads, please. Lord, we come to you, and we kneel before you. We're humbled. You bless us every day, and we're thankful. We need your grace and your love to guide us through all the decisions we have today and to guide us every day. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. All
right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you, and you may be seated. Let the record reflect that Commissioner Nowak is not here. He is on his way, but that all the other members are present today. And we'll acknowledge Commissioner Nowak when he arrives. Do we have a motion to approve the court agenda today?
Move.
Have a motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. At this time, we give opportunity to our citizens to come and to speak with us about issues that are either on the consent agenda or on the open agenda. We do also have a time at the very end for items that are not on the agenda. We ask that you would keep it to 3 minutes, and that if you are going to hand something out or give something to the members up here, that you would ask permission to approach the bench. So if there are any citizens, now is your opportunity to share your thoughts. All right. Doesn't look like anybody has anything to say to us today, okay? Then let's move forward. Proclamations, resolution, and presentation from our executive summary by Texas A&M and Life Extension, AgriLife.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your time, and we really enjoy coming to visit with you each year to kind of give you a recap of what we've done. So we have something for each of you. We have a copy of our executive summary, but you know we can't just give it to you. We've got to make it like kind of pretty. So we've got a cup, a wooden coaster, and a cookie. And the wooden coaster kind of looks like a cookie, so don't get them confused. So if you guys want to take those to them. So we also have some volunteers with us here today that have come to support us. So I'd like to ask them to stand up.
You guys are awesome.
Is that okay. Real Marilyn Kazmierski.
Thank you.
Pauline Vize, Bob Daly, and Bob Hamilton.
Excellent.
Rob Hamilton. I'll give you new names.
Welcome all. Glad you're here today.
Thank you. So we are going to just do a really quick rundown from our executive summary, and we're going to start out with our Agriculture and Natural Resources Department.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you all for having us here. All the text that you've got in the summary, I've pretty much condensed it down to a few words and numbers. In our Agriculture and Natural Resources Department, we've had numerous programs in total numbers with the Grounds Maintenance Conference, Town and Country, CEU program, beef cattle programs, pasture programs, pond programs, and private applicator trainings. We've had approximately 500 people trained through those programs just this past year. Our volunteer committees consist of membership from our Beef Improvement Association, our Horticulture Committee, our Adult Horse Committee, and our Ag Committee. And in terms of volunteer hours, they've contributed over 2,000 hours to the community in terms of programming and volunteerism. And that attributes to about $57,000 worth of economic contribution. The Master Naturalist Program also operates through our office, and they currently have 110 volunteers. They've given over 6,500 hours to the community just this past year through 80 service projects and other things, and that's attributed to about $307,000 worth of impact. So
awesome.
We're really proud of that. And then ag-related 4-H livestock stuff, Currently, we help the kids validate their projects for major stock shows, Montgomery County Fair, of which we still have the pigs to do here pretty soon. We validate over 600 projects for those kids so far. And then kind of our bread and butter, one of the things I do daily, is consults with people off the street. They walk in the door, they call me on the phone, they send me emails, pond, weed management, pasture management, and so forth. And there's been 729 of those this year out in the community. So helping people with whatever issues they have. But thank you guys for your continued support, not just from me, but from all the volunteers that I work with. So thank you all for helping us work with the community.
It's remarkable. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Morning. Michael Potter from the horticulture area.
Yes.
Of the office. Got a nice big old check here for the Master Gardeners. Their volunteer hours this year, 32,053 hours. Even with the pandemic and the freeze and everything else, they're pretty relentless. I would say resilient for the most part. So they keep up as far as bringing in hours for our volunteer program. As well as they also provided, we provided 9 online gardening and landscape-related programs this year, reaching over 1,000 people. We had 3 in-person programs that once we finally got to get back up and running, we had three programs that we did in person for 309. Through the HORT program, I did 17 educational programs combined online and in-person, reaching about 1,800 people. Asked the expert questions, which is something that's kind of different. It's basically email that comes through a different format. I did roughly 75 of those, and those are the ones that take a little time because sometimes those questions are quite loaded. And then just my phone and email contacts for the year were 1,862, and that's kind of what we've been doing for the year. Thank you for your support.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So in Family and Community Health, I was here in June, and I talked to you about the Walk Across Texas project and what we did. This is the 25th anniversary of Walk Across Texas, so we did a special challenge for that 25th anniversary. Wasn't sure if we were going to be able to get more people to participate, but we have about 484 who have participated this fall. So that brings us to a grand total of 860 who have participated in Walk Across Texas. And because that is improving health and wellness of the people who are participating, the estimated economic impact of that in healthcare savings is $4.3 million. And we also have been taking the lead in the statewide Walk Across Texas initiative, and that's had about 4,500 people from across the state who have participated. We also got to get back into the Head Starts and do our Families Reading Every Day project, and we had about 210 children and their families participating in reading, so great for literacy development, for family relationships, just good overall development of those kids for our future. And then we also continue to work with the Behavioral Health and Suicide Prevention Task Force through our mental health and wellness programs. We hosted some mental health first aid classes. So our program assistant, Mike McBride, who has taken a job in Leon County as a county extension agent, but he was able to certify 58 people in mental health first aid, which is another important thing for our community. And I'll pass it over to Michelle.
Good morning. I am Michelle Scaife. I am the Extension Agent for Better Living for Texans, which is a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program Education, or SNAP Ed program. And this year and every year, we focus on 3 primary areas, nutrition, physical activity, and home vegetable gardening as a way to bring education to the community. We were able to get 4,434 educational contacts this year, which resulted in 527 adults completing a series of educational classes in a different nutrition topic. These things increase their knowledge in food safety practices, meal planning, resource management, and, of course, the ability to grow vegetables to supplement their food budget. So this year we've been really working hard to expand into the senior adults in our community and reach different areas. We're working really well with the city of Conroe to bring some of this education to the seniors in our community through the Senior Center and Meals on Wheels. It's been a great partnership, and we're looking to put in some community gardens this year that would be there for those seniors to use at the community center. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Justin Sines. I'm the Urban Youth Agent. My coworker Michelle Mahalik could not make it here. We were just here in September, and you heard firsthand from our 4-H'ers, so I will keep this super brief. We're super excited for the new 4-H year. We surpassed our numbers from last year, which is still down due to COVID, but we are excited to continue to grow that. We're doing some amazing work with our 4-H'ers. We are starting new projects. We call it the Create Project, to give kids opportunity to explore new projects that they could maybe take on and have some entrepreneurship with it, such as pottery, floor design, cake decorating, photography. We're also reaching out into videography and editing, along with our STEM nights that have been a highly successful. But we just want to say thank you for your continued support.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks. Amazing.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Matthew Holloway. I'm the new disaster and recovery agent for AgriLife, and we've continued our mission for the second year in the distribution and coordinating deliveries of PPE and COVID vaccines throughout the state. And we have surpassed 900,000 doses of the vaccine delivered throughout Texas, as well as more than 2.75 million Binex and COVID tests delivered to various healthcare facilities, local governments, and schools. So we've been directed to continue that mission on to April 1st, 2022. So as that pertains to the greater Houston area, we've done over 80,000 doses of various vaccines throughout the community, along with 288,000 various Binex tests. So that's kind of the direction we're going to continue to head toward out of this thing, and we can get back to assisting the community. So very nice to meet you all, and yeah, thank you for the support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then, of course, we continue to do our Extension Hour radio show, which is a great way to continue our outreach. And then just one more time, I want to say thank you so much for our volunteers, the ones that are here with us today, and then the ones that we have that help us throughout the county. So Michael showed the value of the volunteers for the Master Gardeners, but when you put all of our volunteer work together, equating that with $21 per hour or so, like 28. If we had to pay people to do that work, that would equal about $1.1 million that has been contributed to extend our programs. So again, thank you so much. If you've got any questions, we're happy to answer them. But
Amy, this is great. I mean, what you guys are doing, it's remarkable. The amount of ground that you cover in a period of a year and the amount of people that you get together, your ability to pull this amount of volunteers together to do this, which I thought was really appropriate when you showed us the check. That was awesome. That is really a gift back to the community. Well done. I mean, commissioners, I know absolutely. You all feel the same way.
No doubt.
I've been in agriculture business for 30 years, so I know how important it is to the community. So thank y'all for continuing what y'all do.
I think most people know me that I'm kind of a simple guy. Just simple things is where I get my joy. I don't need all the frills and all the frilly stuff. And you know what really gives me joy this morning is this little cup.
Yeah.
Well, number one, it's got Hershey Kisses in it. It's not bad. But it's not one of those big 64-ounce or 84-ounce. You have to have two hands out to carry. So I appreciate that. So thank y'all very much. And we always appreciate when y'all bring stuff up to the court. We do appreciate all y'all do. Thank y'all very much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
And the cookie is a great touch. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate y'all. All right. Let's move forward to our consider and approve resolution of support for Montgomery County Veterans Memorial Park. Who is going to be presenting today?
We have the resolution.
What? Oh, here's Janine.
Oh, here's Janine. There you go. Yes.
Hi, good morning, all. Sorry I wasn't prepared to do this. We really appreciate y'all. Appreciate attorney, county attorney and the assistant, and we truly appreciate all of you. I'm sorry if you can't hear me. We worked together with BD and with Amy, and we came up with this, and we just think it's a wonderful thing for y'all to help support the county. So
you don't have to read the whole thing. The resolution order basically says that we're going to work with the city of Conroe
And that we are going to, if needed and requested, you have the ability to help maintain the park, but I have no obligation to do it. And it runs for a period of 10 years and was terminated previously, but it just says that we support our veterans and we support the work being done over the park. How about that?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. So.
All right, so with that in mind, do we have a motion to approve?
Move.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you all for your continued support. Thank you.
I do have one little thing. Can I give you?
Nice. Awesome. Thank you. All right, as we move forward into, excuse me, Commissioner, did you want to say? Okay. Into item nine, our consent agenda. There is one thing that we would like to defer. It is H2A. That's on page, the work is not complete yet, and it's on page 5 of 10. Correct, Commissioner?
Yes.
Yes. And I'd like to defer that. H2A. Do we have any other modifications?
Yeah, we've got a couple.
Okay.
Page 4, G2C. I want to defer. And then on page 6, M2A, I want to move that to open if I could. And then...
well, let me get that down here, Commissioner.
And then, Judge, Commissioners, P1, Constable Precinct 5, I would like to defer that until the next Commissioner's Court.
Okay, does this have to do with what the Commissioner was just saying? I'm still trying to get his track down here. Okay, you were page 6, M2A, moved to open, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then there was one that you wanted to defer as well?
Yes, sir. It's on page 7, P1.
Okay. For that. All right. Are there any other modifications? All right. If there are no more modifications, do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda with these modifications?
I move.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you. Let's go ahead and move our open agenda if we can. And for the record, Commissioner Nowak is here with us. So we have a full court today. M2A, Commissioner Riley.
Yes, I'd like to move this to, and one of the reasons I wanted to move this to open is I'd like to recognize a couple of people. And I think we've got a display or show or an outline of what we're trying to do. That's perfect. I'd like to recognize Virgil Yoakum and Elizabeth York. If y'all would stand up back here, please. Wood Forest Development and Johnson Land Development. We have been working with these guys for, I don't know, probably a couple of years, maybe 2.5 years, on a donation of about 391 acres of property over off Fish Creek, between Fish Creek and Honey Egypt Road around the Lake Creek bottom. And we finally got all of this, finally got it all hammered out and got it all done, got the paperwork ready to sign. We're going to use this as, keep it as much natural as we can, but we are going to have a park here. We're going to try to get us a community building, a nature center. We're going to try to make this a top-notch destination place for folks in Precinct 2 over around Fish Creek, Wood Forest, Montgomery Trace, up in that area. I'd also like to recognize and thank Bruce Berger and Jennifer Fox, if y'all would stand up, for all the work they've done. It's been a challenging proposition to get this done, to take this on, but it's going to be well worth it once we get all this done, and it's going to be a great asset for Montgomery County, not only Precinct 2, but all of Montgomery County. So I want to thank all these fine folks for all the work they've done, finally getting it nailed down. Virgil or Elizabeth, would y'all like to say anything this morning?
Welcome to Wood Forest.
Thank y'all. Thank y'all very much. I do appreciate all the work y'all put into this. It's going to be a great asset.
All right. Do it.
Thank you.
That's awesome. If you would come to the mic, Virgil. State your name for the record and share with us what you're going to share with the commissioner.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
I'm Virgil Yoakum with Johnson Development. And on behalf of Larry Johnson and the Wood Forest Partners that are making the donation, we're privileged to be able to work with you on this, Commissioner. And in the your interest of being simple and short, have a great day. And I look forward to future generations in Montgomery County and your precinct enjoying all of the amenities that you plan to build. We've seen the concepts and the plans, and we believe that everyone in our region will benefit, and there is a need for these amenities and these facilities, and God bless you and keep everything going that in that direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you
very much for those comments. We have a motion to approve.
I move.
There a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, one and all. We appreciate that so much. Now let's move to our open agenda, emergency management. Jason, come on up and share with us. And Darren.
Good morning, Judge and Commissioners. This has been a long project that Darren's been spearheading for a number of years throughout the history of it. So I'm going to ask Darren to present this item to you guys.
Morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Morning.
Item 10A, consider, discuss, and take appropriate action regarding the purchase and replacement of radios and radio equipment for emergency services districts in Montgomery County. What we're asking here is about 8 months ago, 9 months ago, we began talking with the fire service, and they came forward with a request for about $9 million to help them replace their radios, their emergency response radios in their departments. We knew that was a heavy lift and probably not very probable, so we went back and forth with them. They've done quite a bit of scaling back, and they've sought some other ventures. We're able to replace some of those with local funds. They replaced some of them with grants, and we've got it down to about a $4.7 million ask. And this is basically going to replace radios that we had previously provided to them through other opportunities about 10, 11 years ago. Those radios have run their course of life. They're no longer supported. They're breaking. They're failing. They don't meet the technology standards that are required today. We did that because at the time we were transitioning radio systems. We wanted to keep everybody in the same radio system. It makes better for better responses. It makes things safer for everybody and increases the probabilities of solid communications when it's needed. And so today's ask is for about 700 radios at about $4.7 million.
How do you plan on funding this?
We'd like to use fund balance.
And so you and I have had a lot of conversations about this. And
is it public safety money you're talking about?
Yeah, the
public safety money, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Just last week, Tammy submitted a list of all of the taxing entities in Montgomery County and what their levy is and how much revenue they receive. Each one of these ESDs is their own independent taxing unit. And for you to come in here and ask us to use that money for radios that they should be buying on their own, we've had this conversation, and I think it's a terrible idea. It's complete misuse of county funds. That's not what we should be doing with that money. I'd rather see that go to building a jail, taking care of the needs that we have. And we specifically talked, if you brought this up, that you would consider using only the ESDs that have revenue shortages.
That's correct.
So I made it sure that I was here today to talk about this because I do not think we should take any action on this. Each one of those entities, they collect their own dollars. They're responsible for running their own departments. They should not be seeking radios from us, and we should not be using money for those radios.
Have they purchased? I don't know. You probably know this because you were here. How have they purchased radios in the past? Has it been through their own monies?
I know they've replaced radios with their own money because I have had that conversation.
It's been a combination of efforts, Judge, through local through their budget process.
through other fire assistance grants and through through the county's opportunities.
I would just move we defer this and.
The radios that they have now, who can they communicate with? What is the problem? I mean,
the problem is the radios.
I understand that.
Yeah, they're just starting to fail. They're not up to technology standards, which are required to keep the overall system healthy. And when they're trying to use them during response operations, they're failing on them. They can't get replacement parts for them. The manufacturer is no longer supporting them, and parts are becoming obsolete. They're having to scrap radios and try and pick pieces apart to repair radios.
Do you have a list of who you want to buy and what you want to buy?
Yes, sir. Much to Commissioner Nowak's point, we are going to focus mainly on those departments that they don't have the resources that some of the others. And some of them have completely replaced their radios, and so those departments are obviously going to. Will not be. They don't need any assistance from this project, and that's one of the ways we were able to whittle that number down, that overall ask down. Is going back to them and saying, "Hey, we need to refocus our efforts, and we need to rethink this." And that's what they've done.
So some of the ESDs, they're going to be purchasing their own radios.
That's correct. Some of them have already. Yes, sir.
I understand that they're taxing entity as well as Commissioner Nowak's point, but. I support doing it, and I don't want to. We did this 10 years ago, and I certainly don't want a fire department that's having a difficult time. If we can do this for them, then that's going to free up some money for them to maybe purchase apparatus of some type that they use daily. As the population steadily increases, the risk increases, and I just feel like personally it's the right thing to do. No disrespect, Commissioner Nowak, but I feel it's the right thing to do, and especially for those that may be, as my understanding, Needham's already taken care of their radios over there and probably others, but Porter and East County, I think that they're needing some radios as well.
Yes, sir.
So I'm in support of it.
Yes, sir. And in working with them, you know, they've shared some of their budget process with us, and we've had those conversations, Commissioner Nowak, some of the concerns he had, we pushed those forward, and, you know, they're looking at their budgets, and most of their budgets, up to 82% of their budgets, 88% in some departments are going towards personnel costs. That leaves them with, you know, anywhere from 12 to 18% to try and maintain their operating budget, maintain fire stations, fire apparatus, meet all the NFPA requirements and all the other things that are put on them, and so it's just a capital thing for them, and they've tried to budget it. They'll continue to do so moving forward, and hopefully we won't have to come back in 8-10 years with another request. And I feel confident that the departments are going to carry forward, you know, once we help them out here.
I don't want them delayed to a scene because of a failed communication somewhere. That's just my thoughts.
I was a commissioner for many years, ESD1, and like you say, the apparatus, building these fire stations, ISO changing constantly, trying to it's a big challenge, and I do agree to some extent what Commissioner Nowak has to say, and being responsible, but in a time of need when we need fire support, we don't need them not being able to find and hear calls and things of that
nature. It's a safety issue, not just for the firefighters,
yes,
but for the public as well, and for other first responders who are responding. We need them all operating on the same system. We need them all with the ability to communicate with one another, whether it's a motor vehicle accident or it's a large-scale incident, whether it's a natural disaster or a man-made event. They need to be able to talk on the same system. They need to be able to do it seamlessly and effortlessly for their safety and the safety of everyone involved.
I completely and totally agree. I just think that these ESDs and the commissioners on these ESD boards need to do a better job of allocating their resources. We should not be using our taxpayer dollars on supplementing another taxing entity. I not only think it's wrong, it's egregious. And to think we have a jail that we need to build, we have, Commissioner Riley, you've got a community center and a nature center you're looking at wanting to build. We've got a new precinct three office that we're trying to get set up. Every one of us has a tremendous amount of needs, and just like they do. And I don't think it's, you know.
The difficulty here is we're in the middle of a need. We're just now coming up with this. You're bringing up great points. Nobody's arguing with those. My concern is that in the meantime, when we do have the need, and if they don't have the, those, are we sure, or have you actually done the math on those who have bought or who are able to buy versus those who are underfunded and actually do need it?
Yes, sir. We have done that. We have.
That's the difference between the 9 ask and the 4.7?
Yes, sir.
Is, you know, the lowest ESD number 9, they receive just in their tax collections $1.4 million. The ESD 8 is about 8.4, and they range, most of the other ones are, you know, $5 million, give or take. And that's just their property tax revenue, or their revenue coming in through the tax office that Tammy collects through sales tax or what have you. I mean,
and I agree, but we also have to look at their overall population and the square miles that they serve. Some of these departments are serving 200-300 square miles, and the population density isn't there to support all the operations. And so that's another part of the reason for that ask. Their districts, so, you know, they're running 5,000-10,000 calls a year, and you know, it's a little bit more of a strain, a little bit more harder to operate and stretch that dollar.
So if you have an ESD that has a specific request, let them come and ask us for it then. Instead of just blanketing saying we want $4 million to go to this, why don't we have each ESD submit a request to us of what they need, and let's at least look at it that way. That would be a much more fair way. And if and then as a group, if we decide that we want to help a particular ESD that, just like you said, they're overtaxed or they don't have the ability to tax enough to get what they need, then yeah, maybe we can look at it that way. But to say $4.5 million, 700 radios, that's way too broad.
I can tell you what some of the ESDs 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 9, 10, and 14.
Yeah, well, that's almost all of them. I mean, so
there's a couple of them.
Is it, and it's a matter of, I mean, if the city of Conroe was going to offer Montgomery County, you know, $4.5 million, yeah, I could find a reason to use it too. It's like, do they really need us to provide that to them? And so, you know, maybe each one of us can talk with the ESDs underneath each of us and find out, is this something that they need? Do they want to do it? And approach it that way, a little more refined approach.
You've already been talking to them. I believe that's
the reason they came to our office. It's kind of that unified, because we are that county outreach, that point of contact for them. There are a couple of them here in the court today to show their support for it.
I would be at Conroe City Council meeting if you don't give me $4.5 million.
Correct. Yes.
If we don't do this, what's the result?
Result is that they're going to have to keep trying to find other avenues to find radios, and we don't know what that time period is for them to be able to fully replace the radios, and their response capabilities could be limited.
And who's going to program all these radios?
They currently use the county radio shop.
No, and have we talked to the sheriff? Is he prepared to program 700 new radios?
That's the agreements they have with the radio shop. I don't know
those details.
So we
haven't asked the sheriff if he's even capable of doing that right now with everything else going on.
Well, they're going to have them regardless, whether we buy them or...
I mean, if the radio's not programming, right. He's
well,
got...
But I'm saying, but he's already got those...
Go ahead. Speak
working.
Up.
I'm just saying that if we shouldn't have to ask the sheriff. I mean, that's part of his job. If we need radios for emergency vehicles in the county, that's something that needs to be, you know, addressed.
Well, I'm just saying that 700 more that you're going to put on there while they're servicing this. Yeah. It's not like we're, you know... We'll take them away.
If I don't anticipate all 700 to hit the ground at the same time.
That was my next question. How soon can you get them if you had them right now?
Motorola is running behind on law enforcement radios, and I would assume the same thing is for fire service radios as well. So, I mean, they'll come in batches, and they'll have to be handled in batches. Hopefully it'll come in large enough batch we can take care of one department at a time instead of having to piecemeal a couple radios to each department as they come in. But I don't anticipate all 700 to hit the ground at the same time, which would put a strain on the current radio system, so.
And this, again, the funding source would be reclassified public safety money.
Yes, sir. I mean, the biggest threat to not having unified communications between the fire departments is our ability to respond to disasters, major countywide system events, and, you know, the departments having to figure out on their own what to do. And the last time we've had departments have to go out on their own on radios, they get out of the unified radio system and go out on their own. And that puts a bigger strain on trying to patch channels and communicate amongst each other during a disaster.
Patches fail.
It's not fail-safe technology. And as it stands now, it's not just a safety about the public, getting them to respond. It's also firefighter safety. If they're in a building and they cannot communicate with command to get out during a collapse, we're going to have firefighters in jeopardy. And that's a major thing. City of Houston fought through that 20 years ago, had a number of firefighters killed in action during fire collapses because they could not communicate with radios.
Jason,
I don't like
I'm
to put
sorry.
That
I
on.
Think using threat, scare tactics like that, it's going a little bit far. I understand.
Reality when we speak to what's going on now with our system. And so I'm not using it as a scare tactic. It's just reality. So and
if we do this,
Montgomery County has as the government entity, we oversee fire service protection in the county. We do that through the appointment of our commissioners to the ESD boards that gives oversight from this commissioner's court through those ESDs. So we do have some responsibility to make sure they have the resources.
What has to be done to the radio towers if we do this? What has to be done to radio towers if we go to this new radio system?
The towers are capable of handling the radio system because some of our departments have already forged ahead and moved forward.
We're not creating a new system, Commissioner.
So we're just looking at strictly subscriber new radios. We don't have to do any of the other
because
towers.
The updates on the towers has already taken place.
Yeah.
The hospital district's already moved forward with their updated stuff. Several of the departments have moved forward on their own with in their own budget on this. It's the departments that have, you know, a funding mechanism issue due to pandemic or whatever it be. We got one fire service that's going to have 2,500 new homes drop in the next 4 or 5 years, and trying to keep up with that would be 2 or 3 new stations. Trying to do that within their current type budget and putting radios on the same, it's a
and
stretch.
They have a cap on their budget
on their
the same
rate,
as we do. So they've got a 10, I think it's 10 cents
to the 100
on the 100, which that restricts them as all as it does everyone with their growth.
Much like schools, you know, you have to build a school ahead of the kids coming, so it's there to hit the demand. They have to put a station in there ahead of the build in order to.
All of the radios that they're using at this time, will they all be totally obsolete? Or are they
phased out as we can phase new ones in?
Yes.
Yeah. As they break, they're having to take them out of service.
Yeah. So we're not going to just make a swooping pass and change all the radios at one time.
No.
That's not what
as they
we're
come
doing.
In, right? As they come in from Motorola, as they arrive, they get programmed. Inventory programmed, and then they'll be dispersed
out. But if you could get 700 of them tomorrow, they would show up tomorrow. I mean,
correct.
It's possible.
I mean, yeah, but in reality, we wouldn't be able to program them and switch them out that fast. So,
right.
I mean, so the supply chain would help us with the logistics of that. And much like we did in 2011 when we passed radios out then that were county radios to the fire services, it didn't happen overnight. It was a methodical process to get them issued radios. And we did that during our Magnolia fire. We were getting out new radios out of the box on the scene. So, I mean, this is not something new to us.
Is it possible for us to see each individual commissioner, the ESDs that are in our area, what their needs are, you know, how many radios they need and, you know, the monies and breakdown, kind of like what
Do you have that, Darren?
I don't have that broken down with me right now.
But I mean, can we get it in the future?
Yes, sir. You sure could. Yes, sir.
If we wanted to proceed.
Yeah, maybe we can defer this and talk. And like I said, I would like to know if any of my ESDs are asking for something and what they're. I haven't received that information from you or them.
Just the one.
So, I mean, if we could.
Well, then why don't we do this? If that's the case, it sounds to me like we need some more information. You agree?
Well, I know my ESD, and I think the ones that me and Commissioner Metz share, I know they all have requested some help with radios. I would like to see who wants what. But I agree. I don't want these guys not having what they need to operate. That's not a good spot to be in.
Well, it's not for them and for the citizens. I mean, safety
is not a good spot for anybody.
This is a difficult deal. So let's do this then. May I make a suggestion? We get the information that's been requested. Let's temporarily defer this and bring it back in our next commissioner's court first of the year. Can we do that?
That? Yeah.
Huh?
Good. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Thank you. We appreciate it so much. Elections.
Move.
Second.
Second.
All in. Okay, here we go.
It's pretty simple.
It's,
we got to do it.
So, at least just read the line, if you would, please.
Approve the order for changes to county election precinct boundaries and creation of new county election precincts.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Susie.
Thank you, Susie.
All right, grants and community development.
Again, move.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning. Consider and accept Commissioner Precinct 2 and Commissioner Precinct 3 nominees for the Community Development Advisory Committee.
Move.
You have a motion, a second?
Any discussion?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca.
You need the names
for
now?
The record, Commissioner Riley, who did you say?
Tom Grayson.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Information technology. Bobby?
Yes.
Come speak to us.
Good morning, Judge. Good morning, Commissioners. We've got five items on here. I think we need to take them individually. So item A, consider an approved security project for Commissioner Precinct 1 in the amount of $146,830.77, and we need a funding source for this.
Explain to us what's going on here.
So Commissioner Nowak's office is well locked down. I mean, he's taken time over this last several years to, by increments, put a security system in his precinct that's pretty well state of the art. The other three precincts, which are listed on here, we have some pretty serious security setbacks that we need to mitigate, and we need to mitigate them sooner rather than later. There's a large amount of, or I would say a vast amount of inventory of large equipment and other things on those locations. And we need to be keeping track of what's happening to those vehicles and who's in and out of those locations, like we do any of the other buildings that are secured. Law enforcement uses all three of the locations to park vehicles. We got brand new vehicles at one of the precincts. We've got an impound lot at another one of the precincts, and at Commissioner Riley's precinct, you know, it's full of cop cars, the sheriff's office, and constables, and DPS, and everybody else. And we don't have real security to control who's coming in and out of these locations. And that's what this is to do. And I was
totally
told...
think that everybody should have. I mean, it's certainly something that every commissioner needs. I would just say that I paid for that out of my budget throughout, you know, the year. So I don't have a whole lot of sympathy as far as, you know, since I just prioritized and made it work. But what we have now that we didn't have back then is public safety dollars that, and if we agree to this, I'll just reclassify some of mine that I spent as well and just take it all out of public safety dollars.
Well but you, there's a different level of expense, though, between the precincts, isn't there? Concerning dollars that come in from taxes and who gets what. You've got roads and bridges and all kinds of stuff going on that in South County, although there is some, you've done a great job in pushing us through all that. So you are afforded the ability over time, I would think, correct me if I'm wrong, to have some resources maybe that the other guys don't have or didn't have in order to be able to do this.
Did more. We've just done it slowly over time. We didn't just, you know, do all this at once, kind of like Bobby said. We took it in phases. And really, I mean, if you're going to do it, the best way to do it is just get it done.
Well, my office was wide open to anybody. And we have slowly started bringing in the, you know, things to try to secure. I don't think we have, but we have a camera on our gas pump now, and that's about the only thing.
A potato camera.
I'm
looks
sorry?
Like potatoes on the screen.
So, I mean, this is something one way or the other we're going to move forward with. You know, if I have to,
yeah.
We can't get funding from somewhere because...
Well, we have reclassified public safety money that was the intention of this, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. I would like to take A, B, C, and D, and if possible, use the reclass monies. The D is Constable Cash's office, and they have a real problem with security down there, and they've got all the mental health. You know, we're going to be bringing mental health cases around. We need to be able to secure his building as well. So those first four, A, B, C, and D, I'd like to take from reclass monies if possible.
And I'll just add, if we do that, I'm fine, but I'll add that we'll turn in ours and reclassify.
Right, you can add it to another agenda.
Why can't we just do it now?
Because it's not noticed.
Well, it's not noticed, and we don't know what the total amount is.
All right,
we'll get
that.
A total amount, and
we'll bring
it
up at the next agenda.
If we're doing it, all of it, it would be a consent item on the next agenda.
We'll need to know a total, too.
It'll be $1 million. He said state of the art. No, well, we'll bring it back. Evan?
All right, so...
You know, I understand what you're saying, Bobby, and when we talked about this the first time, I'm just not crazy about locking everything down the way some people want to do. I mean, I want people to be able to come in, even though we had some nutcase walk in with a gun. I mean, I understand that. But again, I've got I've offered, and I've got DPS. I gave them a big space in my barn, and they're there 24 hours a day, in and out. Constables are in and out. Sheriff's office is in and out. I mean, I don't know how much more secure you can get than having somebody, actual live people sitting there looking at things. But I do understand that you can't be seeing it all, and you can't be everywhere where you need to be. It's a lot of money, and I don't like the fact that people can't get to where they need to go. I mean, I don't want people just wandering around my barn, but I don't want to be locked up like Fort Knox. So this 116 you got for me, we may cut that down, but if that's what we want to try to do, I'm pretty sure we're not going to do everything you got on that list.
Okay.
For me.
Well, we're not intending to lock the front doors of the buildings. The intent here is to have free access to the front doors where they can come in the foyers. The largest expense on all of these is the gates. You know, the internal workings of offices are fairly inexpensive, but when we start doing gate technology, I mean, it's upwards of $40,000. And in some cases, we have to motorize these gates because they're not even motorized at this point for some of these. So there's a large expense there that's going to be going to the gate vendors and not so much the security vendors, so that we can automate the opening and closing of these gates.
So what about the new district? For substation over there, is it up to par like we need it to do?
The new one,
the new modern stuff or not?
Yes, sir. The new District 4 substation has all the monies built into it. We built that into the project when we bid the building out, and so is the one on Rayford and
Forensic Center
and Forensic Center as well. That was all built into the projects when we scoped them out at the beginning.
Well, I'm like Charlie. I don't want to lock my building down. I mean, no more than it is right now, but I do. You know, cameras are a big issue because people come and go and things happen. Like, you know, and if you don't have something showing who, what, and where.
Because of that, and because of what you guys have said, then can we, as we move to a motion on this, make this up $2, and if there's monies that we don't spend it.
Yeah, that's how we ought to do anything.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
So can we take A through D as one with one large
with
money amount?
Up $2, yeah. You have a motion?
Second.
We have
any more discussion?
Yes.
We'll get okay. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, item E, consider and approve fiber installation to the Security Community Center out in Security, Texas. We need a funding source from this. What we are going to be doing with this, that's an area that's very underserved in our community from an internet standpoint. We're going to be putting a computer lab out in this community center to allow people to come in and do telehealth, do employment searches, and the request here is that we use the ARPA funds to accomplish
this.
And it's just over $255,000, so it asks for not more than $256,000 to accomplish this.
Where are we at in the ARPA funds now that we, with knowing that we do have some things coming up, but what was the conclusion of that, Amanda?
Out of about $58-59 million, what we got as part of the first tranche, we have committed about $27 million. So there's roughly about 30 plus that's still uncommitted out of the first tranche.
Okay, and this is one of the areas that ARPA specifically mentions, is in the development of broadband and cable, that sort of thing.
Yes, sir.
And fiber. So we can take that out of the ARPA funds then, correct?
Yes, the project as it was described to us would be eligible.
It's very much needed. There's a tremendous amount of people. We're the largest population of any precinct now, and it continues to grow. So
it's a very rural part of the county as well.
It is in that area there, and I appreciate your efforts on that, Bob.
Yes, sir. I'd also like to inform the court, we will be bringing a project, countywide project, soon, probably next court. We'll be bringing a scope of work to do the survey of the whole county that Commissioner Nowak asked us to do, to get possibly get Wi-Fi into parks, into public areas. So that'll be coming. We've got an engineering firm looking at that at the moment. So we'll be bringing that to execute, hopefully, next court.
All right.
Need a motion on
these? Anything else? You ever need a motion?
I'll move.
Second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Uh-huh.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Commissioner.
Appreciate it, Bobby.
Thank you, Bobby.
All right. Purchasing. Gilbert.
Good morning.
Morning.
This item is to approve the award of contract project 2127. This is false alarm management program. This is the company that we want to award to is PMAM Corporation. It's a revenue sharing agreement. 82% of the money collected comes to the county and 18% goes to the vendor.
All right. We have a motion.
Move.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion. If there is no discussion, let's move forward. Thank you all. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Gilbert. Appreciate it so much. At this time, we're going to recess Montgomery County Commissioners Court to convene public hearings. If you would, Amy, if you'd take it away on this for us.
Consider the partial replat of Restricted Reserve East and Darrow Lake Estates to be known as QKTA Realty LLC. The purpose of the proposed partial replat is to subdivide the existing unrestricted reserve and create a separate tract. No objections or concerns have been received prior to today's public hearing. The HOA was not found and the plat is not ready. But is anybody here to speak about this?
That's all right. Then let's move forward. Let's reconvene court.
No action.
And there's no action to be taken on that particular item at this time. All right, Commissioners, Precinct 1.
Commissioner, do you want me to take this one for you,
Mr. Walker? Yes,
okay.
Please.
This one's considered discuss and approve funding options for additional overtime, supplies, and equipment needed for Constable Precinct 1 mental health deputies. After the last Commissioner's Court that I was a part of, you guys had us go back and talk to Constable Cash. We have done that. In consent agenda today, you guys did approve money for ticket writers. That was using the JP Tech Fund, and so that is covered by the technology fund. We are asking for an additional $13,000 for equipment needed for vehicles, but by the time the quotes from July to today, it's about $1,300 more per vehicle, and that is ARPA eligible because it's still for the use of the mental health deputies. The other one, we're asking for about $9,000 in uniforms. Uniforms was a cost that we didn't originally ask for in ARPA money, but after speaking with the county attorney's office, and we've given some information to the constable that we believe that it could be ARPA eligible as long as the uniforms specify that it is for mental health crisis intervention awareness and interactions with those. So we're asking for $9,000 for uniforms, so that's $22,000 from ARPA. We are also asking for $12,000 that we would like to pull that from contingency for the use of training, travel, gun boxes, ammunition, and anything else that might not be related to ARPA that we've seen them buy. Again, that's $12,000 that we're asking. So $22,000 from ARPA and $12,000 from contingency is the funding request.
And the overtime?
Judge. The overtime, what we're asking is if the constables could use their vacancy savings that they've had by not filling all 10 deputies. They're working on getting all those 10 deputies filled, but there's a little bit of vacancy money, so we're authorizing the budget office to transfer money to the overtime line to cover any possible overtime that those deputies might have.
All right. Thank you. Do we have a motion to approve? We have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All right, if there is no discussion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. At this time, executive session, the court will recess for executive session pursuant to one or more of the following provisions of the Texas Government Code, to wit, Chapter 551, Subchapter D, Articles 551.071, 551.072. We'll be a few minutes and we shall return. Going to resume court. All members are present. There is no action to take at this time. At this time, we're going to ask our citizens. There are a number of you, I'm thinking, that want to make a comment. And so now is your opportunity. We give you 3 minutes to do so. And if you have anything that you want to give, as I remind everybody, you want to give to us, please get permission from the dais here to be able to bring something up to us, if you would, please. So, and would you time it?
Yes, I will. Will you also remind that if it's if someone is going to be speaking on the same subject, to if it's not going to be.
If everybody's going, you're free to say what you want to say. For one person to read something or say something, the next person to come up and say the same thing and then say the same thing, it's your call. But we would rather you not do that. But if you're able to, and to know that one person has said it, we're listening. And so if you would just keep that in mind. So who would like to be first? That hand went up right back there first. And if you would come to the, when you do come to speak, that you would state your name and the purpose. Commissioner?
My name is Bob Holman from Willis. The purpose is perhaps and hopefully to save lives. I appreciate
that y'all, I appreciate that y'all did put the monoclonal antibodies into the county. That saved a lot of lives. And related to that, I don't know why. There are so many therapeutics out now for this COVID, and like many senior scientists say, no one should be dying from the COVID now at all in this country. And to that end, have you all read what's happening in some of the South American countries and in India as far as eradicating, I'll quote, Delhi, Karnataka, and another one, also used ivermectin widely and have basically eradicated the virus. And in this one town of there was one town, there were 240 million people in the state in India, and they were having very high rates of getting the virus and death. And I think it was 45 days later, they had reduced it by 98%, and now they are running 99.93% free of the virus. And my thought is, if we had it and it was available to people, people who could afford it, because it's inexpensive, could buy it. And it is so inexpensive that perhaps the county could provide it to those who want it, who are not able to afford it themselves. But I appreciate what you did with the monoclonal antibodies, and this could take it a step further. Additionally, you could compete with Lena Hidalgo, report those who survive the case and have natural immunity. Support those who are in the hospital who have the case. With 240 million people in this country vaccinated and 100 million with natural immunity, it is not the unvaxxed that are causing the problem. And we now know that the vaccine is not the solution. In fact, it may be, if you look at it, they're using the vaccine to ensure this virus continues up through the next election. They're not out, they're not attacking the virus. All this is jab, jab. And all the therapeutics that we know work have been made difficult to get. It makes no sense. The other thing, of course, that bothers me personally is that so many American people were so willing to freely and quickly give up their rights and freedoms. And that's very, very disappointing. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
All right. Yes.
My name is Paul Gregory, and I'm a native Texan, a veteran, and a 20-year resident of Magnolia. And today I want to share the reality of the COVID vaccine and its and the mandates that it has, they're having the effects that they're having on actual people and their lives. This information is being suppressed by our government, high-tech companies, and our healthcare systems. I want to give my time today to a single father, Mr. Ernest Ramirez from Edinburgh, Texas. Mr. Ramirez shares the tragic loss of his 16-year-old son to the vaccination.
My government lied to me. They said it was safe. Now I go home to an empty house where I used to get wake them up. I'd give them a hug and a kiss. Tell them I'm going to school. Don't miss school. I get home from work. He come running out. He knew when I get home, he come running out, give me a hug. I give him a kiss, a hug. What do you want to go eat today? Like I said, he was my baby boy. Everybody knew. We're always together. like I said, next week is his birthday. You know, I better celebrate his birthday. Well, everybody, once we leave here, they're going to forget about what we're doing or what they talk about, what we said here. They're going to be enjoying time with their family and kids. Thanksgiving, I'm going to spend at the cemetery. Christmas, at that cemetery. They need to quit pushing this on their children. I lost mine. Y'all need to protect yours. They're trying to target the 5 to 12 year olds. We're going to have more deaths in our hands than they planned. And they say it's worth the risk. It wasn't worth the risk to me. My son was the world. He meant the world to me. They could never give him back to me. That's all I wanted, my son back. So don't make the mistake that I did. I did it because I thought it was the correct thing to do. It wasn't.
Commissioners, we're asking you to protect us. This is much larger than just the question of whether the experimental vaccine is safe or whether it's worth the risk that we're being asked or coerced to take. It's about protecting our individual liberties and our God-given constitutional rights to make our own choices and not to be coerced by government or our employers. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, Paul. All right. Is there anyone else? Yes, ma'am. If you state your name for the record, please.
Good morning, I think.
Good
Maybe
morning.
For a few more minutes. My name is Cindy Phillips, and can I approach, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Cindy Phillips, and I'm a resident of Montgomery County. I do request the delivery of this notice to be included in the minutes of this meeting. As our county elected officials, you have just now received a copy of the Omega Brief that has been delivered to every Texas House representative and state senator, the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the attorney general. This document contains irrefutable evidence of COVID pandemic criminal conspiracy and racketeering identified by David Martin, PhD, in patent filings. Criminal charges are being filed for using the flawed PCR testing responsible for the gross overstatement of positive COVID cases. Many of us in this room and beyond know the contents of this brief and are excited and grateful for the clarity this information brings to the COVID chaos that we have all suffered from in one form or another. We hope and pray that this information aids in your duty and oath to defend the U.S. Constitution and uphold our laws by using your power and your authority to seek avenues to help prosecute guilty parties. We look forward to hearing how you will respond to this information now that you know. We will be following up with you in this regard. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. All right, is there anyone else who would like to come? Yes.
Is it good morning or is it good afternoon? I think it's good afternoon. My name is Dorothy McCann, and I am also a resident of Montgomery County. I started a group of women, concerned women, I think we're called Texas Concerned Women, God's Digital Angels, and we have joined forces with Convention of States to get this information out about the Omega Brief. We very much believe in this brief and what Dr. Martin has found. It's a consolidation of evidence of criminal activity provided by national and international expert witnesses. It reveals bad actors who are responsible for the coronavirus pandemic. Federal agencies have established treatment guidelines based on chosen narratives to direct the actions of our state boards and our physicians. These treatment options are both at the state and local departments of our state health services. Evidence that is presented is from patents issued by federal agencies, federal employees, and pharmaceutical companies. The evidence presented is based upon agency guidelines. This report, the Omega Brief, shows the recent activity of the FDA recall of the PCR test. Not many people know that the PCR test is not an accurate measurement. The VA study shows conclusions and relevance of remdesivir. My mother entered the hospital with COVID and actually died after getting remdesivir. I was on a Zoom call with Senator Bob Hall of many residents in the Montgomery County, the Humble area, where people died after being given remdesivir. That's one of the reasons I started God's Digital Angels, because we all say something is happening here. Something is not right. There is an alleged underreporting of vaccine injuries. Sorry, it's kind of emotional to me because my mother just died of that. And so if you have your the Omega Brief, there is a blue tab. Each speaker that comes up after me, they will be showing you information that's highlighted in that blue tab. There are paragraph numbers, which represents the paragraph markers. There's coloration of the text that indicates the severity of the context we will be talking about. That means? Yeah. Does that mean?
Yes. That means for me, sir. Thank you so much. Is there someone else? Yes.
Hey, my name is Jordan Brown. I'm actually a new resident here in Montgomery County. I'm just moved here from Dallas, so don't hold that against me. But I'm here on behalf of the Don Huff Fines campaign, but I'm not speaking on his behalf. I'm just saying that's who I'm here with. But I don't have anything planned to say. I just want to say it's absolutely immoral what the state and federal level have allowed to have happened to our rights and have them just trampled on over the last year and a half. This affects me personally. My grandma is actually in the hospital suffering from what we believe is COVID. There's debate about whether or not that's legitimate or not, but she is in the hospital, and we are actively fighting the doctors to make sure that she does not receive what the last speaker said in remdesivir or whatever that's called. But she's not going to be receiving that, and I just want to say that I think it's absolutely immoral, the fact that we've allowed our rights to be trampled on over this last year and a half. And I just want to say that I think all the speakers before me have totally legitimate points, and that we really need to start focusing on getting our rights back. That's literally all I have to say. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Tina Orbaugh, and I'm wondering if I can approach.
Yes, you can.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I handed you a VARS report. I don't know if you know about VARS. VARS is your Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. That is where people have to report if they have anything that was directly a cause of the vaccine. okay? And this is what we have up to date. You have 837,593 adverse reactions as of 93. Well, I gave you all of them, so I don't have one. Okay, I have an old one. I have an October one. My October one says 837,000. You have 875,000, and that's what it went up from October till November. And then you have it listed with doctor visits all the way down to shingles. This is caused from the vaccine. People don't know this. It takes over usually an hour to fill out the application to write this. It is usually a loved ones that have passed away. They are the ones they have to fill it out, or if a loved one that has had one of these. So I don't want to go through all of them, but you see that there's hospitalization, deaths, life-threatening miscarriages, heart attacks from the vaccine. The vaccine doesn't work. It does not work. You want to save money? Put all those shots that you just ordered, bring them back, because it does not work. I have a list of people that have caught COVID after they got the vaccine. And I said, it doesn't work. Your natural immunity is your best immunity. Your best immunity. Because once you get natural immunity, you don't get COVID again. Okay? Unless you are something with, if it goes from one person to the other, from a vaccinated to an unvaccinated. And people don't want to hear that because most of the people have been vaccinated. It gets worse the more vaccinated you get. So make sure you don't get more of them. And as far as the kids are concerned, this is how many shots the kids get. This to let you know. They're killing them. They are killing them. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing this to us. Someone else?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Sunday.
You know, speak into the microphone.
My name is Sunday, and I have a whole thing here to read. I don't have anything to give you, but can I come show you a picture on my phone?
Sure.
I would like to show you how great your vaccine works and how monoclonal antibodies are not readily available. This is how I spent Christmas with my dad. We just buried him for COVID. Y'all were amazing. People that do not work. My dad was taken to the hospital. Yeah, we have monoclonal antibodies. But you know what they said? Oh, we can't get him in. So I take him back the next day, and we can't get him in. I take him to another hospital, and the doctor literally told me that if he had been able to get monoclonal antibodies, we would have had a different outcome, and my dad would probably still be here. I'm sorry. I had a whole thing to read to tell you how they've changed the definition of what a vaccination is. From 2015, it went from prevent the disease. 2021, for immunity. 2021, now protection from specific disease. Our media does not tell the truth. These vaccines do not work. You still get COVID. My dad refused to take hydroxychloroquine. My dad passed away. My mother had congestive heart failure, and they did not expect her to live if she got COVID. My mom is now 73 years old after taking hydroxychloroquine, and she walks up to 5 miles a day. Vaccines don't work. We need prevention. We do not need our constitutional rights being stomped on with mandates that don't even work. We need prevention. I stopped 3 minutes from that.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I can see by the clock it's afternoon. My name is Deborah Ferris, and I'll be reading just a short piece of the Omega Brief. I won't take up my 3 minutes. If you want to follow me, I'm on page 6, starting at item 23, paragraph 48. This statement...
Under the blue tab.
Okay, this statement was made by Peter Daszak in 2015 and was reported in the National Academies of Press publication on February 12, 2016. Peter Daszak said, and I quote, "We need to increase public understanding of the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. By the way, Peter Daszak is the head of EcoHealth Alliance, and they receive funds from the NIH, a.k.a. Dr. Fauci. This was not a lab leak. This is not a novel virus. There's really nothing that is new in this virus, nothing. 73 patents on everything clinically novel, all issued before 2019, and this was actually not a release of anything. Because of this patent on that lung-targeting coronavirus was transferred mysteriously from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, to the National Institutes of Health in 2018. This patent, the single patent required to develop the Vaccine Research Institute's mandate, was shared between the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill in November of 2019 and Moderna in November of 2019, when UNC Chapel Hill, NIAID, and Moderna began the sequencing of a spike protein vaccine a month before an outbreak ever happened. So, thank you.
Yes.
I need to just make an announcement. I have to leave for a doctor's appointment at 1 o'clock, so I'm going to have to leave. I'm not going to be able to hear the rest of your testimony.
No worries. Thank you.
Will you address the miscellaneous item for me? Thank you. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you.
Proceed.
Hello. My name is Steve Lawrence. Please turn back a couple of pages. Page 3, starting with item 7, paragraph 12. The National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease.
What page is that on, Steve?
It's page 3 of the tabbed, the blue tab, starting at item 7.
Okay.
The National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease built an infectious replication defective coronavirus that was specifically targeted for human lung epithelium. In other words, we created SARS almost 2 decades ago and patented it on April 19, 2002, before there was ever any alleged outbreak in Asia, which, as you know, followed that by several months. And we're talking about the original SARS. Please now turn to pages 4 and 5, just flip the page, beginning at item 14, paragraph 4. It's critically important because fact-checkers have repeatedly stated that novel coronavirus designated as SARS-CoV-2 is in fact distinct from the CDC patent. And here's both the genetic and patent problem. If you look at the gene sequence that was filed by the CDC in 2003, again in 5, and then again in 2006, what you find is between 89 and 99% of the sequence overlaps that have been identified in what's called the novel subclad, or a subclad is a subgroup of a haplogroup of SARS-CoV-2. What this means is that SARS-CoV-2 was synthesized from the original SARS virus back in 2003. Indeed, one of the nucleotide sequences on the spike protein showed 100% commonality with the original SARS. This is considered statistically extremely unlikely, if not impossible, without human intervention. This, by the way, is what achieved the gain of function by Xi Zheng Li in Wuhan. Take note of April 28, 2003. We're continuing on. After the CDC filed a patent on the SARS coronavirus in 2003, 3 days later, a company that was set up in Maryland, Sequoia Pharmaceuticals, on the 28th of April, filed a patent on antiviral agents of treatment and control of infectious coronavirus. CDC filed 3 days earlier, and the treatment was available 3 days later. Sequoia Pharmaceuticals and ultimately AB Lynx Pharmaceuticals became rolled into a proprietary holding of Pfizer, Crucial, and Johnson & Johnson. So ask yourself a simple question. How would one have a patent on a treatment for a thing that had been invented 3 days earlier? The April 28, 2003 patent number identified as 7151163 issued to Sequoia Pharmaceuticals has another problem. The problem was that it was issued and published before the CDC patent on coronavirus was actually allowed. So the degree to which the information could have been known by any means other than insider information between these parties is zero. This is not physically possible for you to, it's not physically possible for you to patent a medication that treats a disorder that had not been published because CDC paid an additional fee to keep it secret. This is the definition of criminal conspiracy, racketeering, and collusion. This is not theory, it's evidence. You cannot have future information of a treatment for a thing that does not yet exist.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Who's next? State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Judge and Commissioners. My name is Helen Erickson, and I would like to address the failure of Dr. Fauci's to get Moderna's patent of the COVID vaccine. Moderna knew that it was going to be placed in the front of the line with respect to the development of the vaccine in March 2019. Their term is deliberated release of coronavirus. In November, they entered into a research and cooperative research and development agreement with UNC Chapel Hill with respect to getting the spike protein to put inside of the lipid nanoparticle so that they actually had a candidate vaccine before we had a pathogen allegedly that was running around. So Fauci lamented the fact that he could not find a way to get people to accept the universal influenza vaccine. March of 2019 in amended patent filings by Moderna. We see that there is an epiphany that says, what if there was an accident or an intentional release of a respiratory pathogen? This is very important. Turn the page to the item 39, paragraph 89. Dr. Fauci tried desperately to get some of his, quote, synthetic RNA vaccines published. He had his own patents rejected by the patent office. These arguments are persuasive to the extent that an antigenetic peptide stimulates an immune response that may produce antibodies that bind to a specific peptide or protein, but it is not persuasive in regards to a vaccine. This is the patent office. This is not some sort of a public agency. This is a patent office. This is a patent office, and the immune response produced by vaccine must be more than merely some immune response, but must also be protective. So Dr. Fauci himself was told by the patent office themselves that what he was proposing was a vaccine does not meet the patentable standard, the legal standard, or the clinical standard. The result is that today, hundreds of millions of people are being injected with a pathogen stimulating computer sequence, which is being sold under what the patent office, the medical profession, and what the FDA in its own clinical standards, what would suggest is a vaccine, but by using term vaccine, we actually now subjecting hundreds of millions of people to what was known to be by 2005 a biological weapon. It is not vaccine. It is a bioweapon. It's a plandemic.
Time's up.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Tammy McDonald, and I am concerned that science and facts are being missed, so I'm here to share some more. If you could please look on page 3, item 9, paragraph 17, just follow along, and it says, throughout the fall, the lawyer Reiner Fulmick and Dr. David Martin, PhD, began monitoring enormous numbers of bacterial and viral pathogens that were being patented through the NIH, the NIAID, the USAMRID, the U.S. Armed Services Infectious Disease Programs, and a number of other agencies collaborating with them. Our concern that the coronavirus has been seen as not only a potential manipulatable agent for potential use as a vaccine vector, but it has also been clearly being considered as a biological weapon. Now, continue to page 5, item 21, number, paragraph 41. DARPA actively took an interest in coronavirus as a biological weapon when June 5th, 2008. AB Lynx, which is, as you know, now is part of Sanofi, filed a series of patents that specifically targeted what we have been told is a novel feature of SARS-CoV-2. And you've heard what I've said. This is, what's the date? June 5th, 2008, way before this pandemic hit. Specifically, they targeted what is called the polybasic cleaving site for SARS-CoV, the novel spike protein, and the ACE2 receptors, binding domain, which is allegedly a novel SARS-CoV-2. All of that were patented, again, June 5th, 2008. Those patents and sequences, all of these redundant new patents, the new vaccines that are coming out, realize this is all planned well ahead. The patents and sequence were issued between November 24th of 2015, which was U.S. patent number 9193780. So, after that one came out, the gain of function moratorium, every attribute that was allegedly uniquely published by single reference publication.
This is our time.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yes, ma'am. State your name for the record.
My name is Roxanne Stage, and I'm a citizen of Montgomery County. Continuing on, the novel bat coronavirus reveals natural insertions at the S1, S2, ACE2 cleavage site of the spike protein and possible recombinant 3 origin of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. The paper that has been routinely used to identify the novel virus, unfortunately, if you actually take what they report to be novel, you will find 73 patents issued between 2008 and 2019, which have the elements that were allegedly novel in the SARS-CoV-2, specifically as it relates to the polybasic cleavage site, the ACE2 receptor binding domain, and the spike protein. So the clinically novel components of the clinically unique, clinically contagious, you know where I'm going with this. There was no outbreak of SARS because we had engineered all of the elements of it by 2016. The paper that was funded during the gain-of-function moratorium that said that the SARS coronavirus was poised for human emergence, written by Ralph Barrick, was not only poised for human emergence, but it was patented for commercial exploitation 73 times.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
Hello, my name is Susan Scruggs, and I wanted to talk about what what the CDC has done. The CDC used to be an organization that you looked to for medical research, for assimilating the data and letting us know the truth about medications, diseases, etc., protecting the public. It no longer has that ability. It is compromised. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was how they've changed the definitions, which Sunday mentioned somewhat about that. But before 2015, vaccination was defined as an injection that could kill or weaken some kind of an infectious organism to prevent the disease, such as smallpox, such as rubella, such as the mumps and the things that the childhood prevention injections help with the children. In 2015 to 2021, they changed the definition to be it produces an immunity to a specific disease, which is still, you know, if you have an immunity, that's a good thing. Well, now in September of 2021, the CDC has changed their definition once again to compromise this vaccine and the effects of it to the act of introducing a vaccine into a body to produce protection from a specific disease. That's not what a vaccine is supposed to do. When I was in the pharmaceutical industry, they tried to develop a vaccine for HIV. And they worked on it and worked on it, and it did not suppress the viral load enough, so the vaccine manufacturing was shut down, the trials were shut down, and so the vaccine, a vaccine produces immunity. That's the purpose of a vaccine. If it doesn't produce immunity, there's no sense in having a vaccine. And so consequently, this vaccine, as they're calling it, is not really a vaccine because it does not produce an immunity. You can still contract it. You can still spread it. It's very contagious. Thank you very much.
If I can, if I may make a couple of comments. So that we're clear, no member of this court has mandated vaccines. We are against mandated vaccines. We have not implemented any type of forced vaccines. And there's been no money and no order. Excuse me, that's my time's up. There has been no money or order that has been sent out from this court, spent by this court, that has to do with enforcing anybody to get a vaccine. The governor has recently come out. He has fought for this. He re-upped again recently for the state of Texas against the vaccine mandates. There has been comments, and we have spoken against the issue of vaccine passports and that sort of thing. We support the free choice of the people to be able to do, and that's always been our position in all of this. And so I want to encourage you that we believe that the citizens are able to make informed decisions based upon what they believe, just like you all coming here and saying this, and there are those that would have issues with that. But that being said, this court, across the board, we have said no vaccine mandate. We're not going to do that. And we are not in a lawmaking position to do something like that anyway. So I just want to encourage you with that. We're not the enemy here. And I appreciate your report and what's been brought here. And I look forward to reading it with great enthusiasm as we move forward. But I'm even in my own messaging have come out and said that we won't have it in Montgomery County. So from that perspective, we appreciate you guys coming and sharing these things with us. We have the documents that we need, unless there's more documents you want to share. But I can tell you, our guys here, we all are in agreement on this, and we'll read this. And if there's something we are able to do, to keep this from moving forward in any particular means. There might be opportunity to do that. But from that perspective, these are my comments as it relates to that.
You're getting a little far
into
in responding to public comments.
It's not a noticed agenda item, and so we really can't have a discussion.
Okay.
Would have to be on the agenda. It's just public comment. We receive information at this point, but we can't really have a discussion.
Thank you for the legalities. We appreciate it. So with that in mind, are there more comments that you would like to make? Yes, if you would please.
Hi, my name is Dawn Bednarz. I'm a resident of Montgomery County. I appreciate what you just sort of said without saying. But anyway, I appreciate your sentiments on that. And I appreciate y'all taking the time to listen. This stuff is heavy stuff. I mean, you said read it with enthusiasm. I've been pouring all that thing for like a week, helping prepare what we would say in this. And it's not something to get real excited about. It's hard to read. But it's important that we know. So all this, we've done a lot of heavy stuff. We've done a lot of kind of doom and gloom. We've lost our rights, all this stuff. I'd like to leave you with a little bit of encouragement. And it kind of fits with what I think that y'all's philosophy is. Kind of have to pretend I'm wearing a big white stallion, you know, the big old. Hold your ground, men and women of this great nation. A day may come when the courage of man fails and we forsake our friends. The COVID recovered, the military, the nurses, the doctors, our children. And we may break the bonds of decency and humanity and scientific truth. But today, it is not that day. The hour may come when we give in to policy, big money, and fear. And we let truth and database science come crashing down. Today is not that day. This day, we fight for science, for truth, for our children, for our future, for our country. By all that you hold dear on this good earth, I bid you stand. Stand for science with wisdom over deception and fear. And again, I thank y'all for taking the time to listen to us today.
Thank you. All right. I don't see any hands or anybody moving, so I'm assuming that our time has come to an end. If there are no other comments, do we have a motion to adjourn?
We have one miscellaneous comment from Commissioner Nowak that he asked me to address, and it's
miscellaneous?
What would be on the next agenda? He would like the court to consider bringing back an item regarding the towing contract that was awarded at the last one, having Gilbert review some questionable actions by the towing company, and if he seems fit, maybe canceling that contract in his discretion and bringing it back for your consideration. Would you like an agenda item at the next court?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Do we have a motion to adjourn? Second? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Ma'am? We are adjourned, but you're welcome to come back and speak again. I apologize as I looked and kind of solicited, so we're done. Thank you.